Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets NLCS Preview Show. This is Vinny with my co-host Mike. Mike, can you believe that we are using the words NLCS Preview Show tonight?
You gotta believe.
And you, and look, we have a great show tonight. We're going to have our, this is the if it ain't broke, don't fix it version of the show, because in our NLDS podcast, we had our two special guests, Ed Marcus from Mets Police and Steve King from the Eddie Crane Pool Society. They will both be joining us again because whatever mojo we had working for the NLDS, we want to see if we can replicate. And let's face it, those two guys are just great. We're also expecting a call from Artie from Brooklyn, although I did speak to Artie from Brooklyn early this morning, and he is pretty delirious, so I'm not sure if he's going to be able to hit the right buttons to call us. He really is losing his mind with this. We're going to talk about the NLCS versus the Cubs that starts tomorrow night, but we have to spend, you know, a significant amount of time talking about the Mets' victory in the NLDS against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And in particular, we're going to talk about the series, Mike, but I would have a feeling that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Game 5, because that Game 5 victory, it automatically goes up there. Maybe it doesn't have the signature moment of things like Todd Pratt's home run against the Diamondbacks or something like, or even something like, even on a losing series, things like the Robin Ventura Grand Slam single or the Andy Chavez catch. It didn't have necessarily a moment, although there were some great moments. But regardless, that's going to go down as one of the most memorable Met postseason victories. It goes up there with everything short of winning a World Series. Would you agree, Mike?
Yes, I'll call it like a pre-World Series game. You know, this is World Series always, you know, just sort of takes a little bit more special to it. This was a really this game was just. It was just so tight the entire game. You know, we get a run, but they come right back and get two, but miraculously that was it. And then all those base runners for the Dodgers, I mean, you know, the game was just so tight. You just never, until that last out was over, you just never felt like any comfort, any comfort.
No, you're absolutely right, Mike. It was the kind of game where you just kept, you know, every batter had some real significance, and that's one of the games that you love. And there's a few different storylines I guess we have to focus on. I guess the best place to start is Jacob DeGrom, the starting pitcher. I mean, I personally, Mike, was very confident going into this game because of Jacob DeGrom being the starting pitcher and how great he's been, not just in the regular season, but in his first start of the NLDS. He had 13 strikeouts, 7 shutout innings at Dodger Stadium in the previous start. So I felt pretty good. When he came out in the first inning, after the Mets had gotten a run in the top of the first, although we were slightly disappointed because they scored and they had a runner on third with only one out, and Yoenis Cespedes up, and Cespedes failed to get him in. He struck out. So you had a little bit of a feeling of we could have done more. And then you had a slight negative feeling, even though you had a 1-0 lead. And then DeGrom comes out and he gives up a run. There's runners on base. He was really shaky in that first inning. You were almost afraid that the game was going to blow up and get away from you there. But from that moment on, that was the story of Jacob DeGrom's first 6 innings. He would get guys on base. I think he only had 1-2-3 inning out of his 6 innings. There were guys on base the whole rest of the night, and he just kept getting out of it. And he didn't have his best stuff. He was struggling with command. But he battled and he got through, and he was, you know, the bend don't break defense, you know, from using a football adage. That was DeGrom. And you know, the more that kept happening, that guys kept getting on base and he kept wiggling out of it, I started to get confident. And you've got to give Jacob DeGrom a hell of a lot of credit for the way he battled and the way he pitched without his best stuff. And he held, you know, that first inning 2 runs was all he gave up. It just, you know, it kind of even, it's funny how not having the dominant start that we had almost expected, somehow still elevated him to that elite ace status because of what he was able to do, with his B game rather than his A game. It's pretty amazing, Mike.
Hey, I mean, bottom line, when it comes to DeGrom last night, with all those base runners, there was all that trauma, there was all that heartburn for some of us watching it. But, you know, when the dust settled, 6 innings, 2 runs, and right, the results were still there. And it was funny. You know, you start to watch the game, and you're just so caught up in the game, and all the fact that there was just something. It just felt like the Dodgers always had, you know, somebody on second base. I just almost felt like they were starting the innings. And you know, I watch a college football game now, and at overtime, they just like start you off on the 20-yard line or whatever they do.
Right.
It's almost impossible not to score. I felt like every inning they were just sticking the Dodger on second base and going, okay, let's go. You know, like, this is how this is going to work tonight. We're going to let them do that. And we just kept, you know, as you said, you know, the ground just kept wiggling out of it. It was just unbelievable to watch. But over the years, you know, we've probably seen so many games like that, you know, not big games necessarily, you know, regular season games, that type of game where, you know, the team you're rooting for, in our case, the Mets, loads the bases, loads them again, and does a score, leaves guys on third like crazy with less than 2 outs. And you know, you usually lose those games. And somewhere along the line, you pay for all that. And I think the one thing, it was just hard to be confident because the stakes were so high and it rattles the nerves. But at some point, you had to start to feel that way, that wait a minute. You know, you only get so many opportunities, and they're wasting a lot of opportunities. And to me, that's why I want to talk about clear Met of the NLDS, Daniel Murphy. The moment for me that I started to realize, wait a minute, this game is all of a sudden set up for us, was when Daniel Murphy stole a run. You know, it was 2-2, and you look up and go, how could we possibly be tied right now when we are?
I would agree, Mike, and we're going to get to our panelists in a minute. I just want to finish this thought about Murphy. I thought the same thing, that when you kind of looked up after all of the chances that the Dodgers had, and it was a tie game at that point, I did have the feeling of, you know what, maybe now, you know, they've had their chance. Eventually, Greinke's going to be out of this game. And, you know, it changes things. And so, but one of the real reasons why I felt that way, let's be completely honest, Mike, it was because of the way we got that run. We've spent a lot of time on these shows talking about Daniel Murphy, talking about you have to take the good with the bad, talking about the, you know, scratching plays that he makes on the bases and in the field, throwing to the wrong base, running at the wrong time, you know, things that he does, Murph being Murph. And yet he made one of those moves. You know, I was talking to somebody this morning. I said, you know, this is one of those things that usually gets reserved for the revered people, like, you know, the Derek Jeter, or what a heady play. He's the only person who would have done. No, it was Daniel Murphy. The guy who throws to an unoccupied base is the guy who saw the third base was unoccupied because of the shift that was on for Lucas Duda. And when Duda walked, you know, the Dodgers defense didn't adjust in time, and there was nobody covering third base, and Murphy was able to go, you know, from first to third on a walk, score on a sacrifice fly by Travis d'Arnaud. You know, that was one of those moments. And you say, hey, if Murph is being the heads up ball player, you know, this is our night. And that was just the feeling that I had. And I'm sure you felt the same way.
You know, I feel there's two absolutes with Daniel Murphy. One, Daniel Murphy can really hit. And two, Daniel Murphy can't really do anything else well on the baseball field. And so, yeah, I mean, he's not the guy. He's the guy that I'm expecting to make that play, but he's the guy I'm expecting to make play and not realizing that there's actually a guy standing on third base with the ball in his hand. So, I mean, it was just, you just had to start to say, this might be our night.
I agree. And Mike, I think this is the time we should probably bring in our great panel. We have Ed Marcus and Steve King joining us again this week. Hey, guys, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. You guys recovered yet?
Oh, I'm
you think Artie's. You think Artie's, Chad? You should see me right now.
Yeah.
I think Dave knows. I've been up since 3 o'clock this morning. I went to bed at about 1:15.
Oh, man.
The adrenaline rush from last night has gone, so now it's like just on fumes after working 12 hours today. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Steve, it's funny you should say that, Steve, because somebody said to me, I was talking to a Met fan, all pumped up, who said, I wish they were playing tonight, and this was at about 4:30 this afternoon, and I had already lost it. And I said, no, I'm very glad they're not playing tonight.
Yeah.
I could use I could use the night off.
He either works for the government or he's unemployed.
or he drinks a lot of Red Bull.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, again, it is Mike. I also want to thank you so much for being on tonight, guys. And eventually we'll get around to the Cubs, and you know, we've got to do a little bit of prediction and discussion about the upcoming series. But we just think that, you know, this series was such a great series, just ended. So we do want to spend a little bit more time on the Dodgers before we totally throw dirt on them and tell them to enjoy their offseason. So along those lines, it was just such a crazy moment. And in the end, you know, the Mets won and that's that. But everybody has an opinion on it. And I'd love to get our panel's opinion on it. So, you know, we'll change the order a little bit. I was putting Ed on the spot, making him go first last time every time. So, Steve, I'm going to start with you. The Utley play, and I think that's all I got to call it. If you were the umpire, what's your call?
I would have called what's in the rule book. I would have called interference, and it would have been a double play. He didn't make any attempt to slide into the base. He was making an attempt to knock out Tejada to break up the double play. But the way he did it, he didn't slide until he was even or a little ahead of the base. If Utley would have slid like 10 feet before the base and this happened, I don't think I wouldn't have a problem. I would just say, look, it's an unfortunate thing, and it happened. But his intent was to just take out Tejada and go right into him. He didn't even really slide. He was to a body block. And in the rule book, the interference rule is in there. And the umpire, to me, would have been within his rights to call the interference and say, listen, I'm putting the rule. It's in the rule book. He interfered with him because when you look at it, Tejada, as he got the ball in a bad angle, but he was trying to make the move to make a throw when he got taken out and was injured. And, you know, the umpires, they could have gathered around and made that decision, and it wouldn't have mattered about replay or anything else. They would have said, listen, it's in the rule book, and we're going to enforce this rule, the interference rule. I think it's 601-something. And they didn't do it. And what they ended up doing is they turned the whole thing into a fiasco, especially Joe Torre. He had no idea what was going on after that game. They had him in that interview room, and he had Randy Marsh in back of him, who was an umpire and now is an umpire supervisor. And every time anybody from the media asked Torre a question, he kept looking at Randy Marsh asking him. So I was like, well, why don't you make Marsh sit down and answer the questions, because you have no idea what's going on. You know, it was to me, that was more of an embarrassment for baseball in what happened there that night than anything about, you know, the Mets and the Dodgers. But, you know, Hundley has a history of doing that. I mean, that's the way he plays. He's done it before. He's taken out Tejada like that before. So, you know, and the problem is it's a postseason game. You know, I know a lot of Met fans wanted to, you know, just go crazy and start throwing at people. But, you know, if hopefully Utley decides to play one more season and then we can get him. But you got to keep your eye on the prize and getting, you know, and somebody had put a mime on Twitter today, like, you know, they broke our legs, but we broke their hearts. So, That's
a good one.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw a better one. There was a picture of Sean Connery from The Untouchables. Says, you put ours in the hospital, we put yours in the morgue. We are New York.
So, Ed, what's your call there? Interference?
I agree with Steve. That was definitely interference. I mean, and it's simple as this. It was obvious that Chase Utley was sacrificing himself, out just to get the run home. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. For the fact that he barreled in like that, just like Steve said, without even trying to slide, going pretty much past the bag before he even committed to doing what people have called a slide. Like Steve said, it was a tackle. I mean, or at least he tried to clip his legs out. It was just a dirty play, and we've seen him do it before. He's been known for this play. I mean, for the fact that he didn't go back to touch the bag and he just ran off the field, he didn't really care. I thought it was just utterly classless by Mattingly to even come back out and challenge this while, Tejada was pretty much writhing on the field. It was just a comedy of errors. And I'll go one step further here. If the Mets ended up losing last night, I mean, this would have been a permanent stain, in my opinion, or at least it would have been a lasting stain, because let's face it, had the Mets come across with the win, hit the interference play, what actually called on Saturday, no doubt in my mind, we would have won on Monday and we would have swept it in three games. I mean, it would have possibly have taken the playoffs away from the Mets, and that would have been probably one of the biggest errors that ever has happened, probably since that play against the, Yankee Stadium a couple of years ago, where they called the a foul ball fair and, totally screwed up championships. I forgot for which team. It's the Twins, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was the Twins.
I mean, it was just ridiculous. Guccione has always had a reputation of being a very bad umpire, and he blew it again. I don't know if it's because he got the Dodger Stadium crowd got into his head, and he was afraid to actually call Utley out. I don't know. Right? Maybe it's because Utley is a distinguished veteran. I put that in quotations. It just boggled the mind. Like watching Torrey coming across as a doddering old fool, and I have a lot of respect for Torrey, but it just seemed like you say one thing, but then you contradict yourself because if he gave up the base, how can you go back and tag him? Were you going to send somebody into the dugout with a ball in their hand and tag him out? I mean, he abandoned the base. I mean, it was simple as that. So at the very least, there should have been at the very least one out, but I do agree there should have been an interference play call, and that should have been a double play, inning over.
Vinny, your thoughts?
Well, look, I'm going to slightly disagree in that if it was up to me, I think it would be just a force out. I understand. Look, I do think it was a dirty slide. He slid very late. He could not touch the base, which is usually the line that's crossed. If you can't touch the base, that's what the rule says. So, but I still think it, given the circumstances, in the postseason, all that, I think you accept the force out and you move on, but you say, hey, that was a dirty slide. The fact what Ed just said about Don Mattingly having the nerve to challenge the call, first of all, I agree with Ed that that's classless, but I think that's where this devolved here because you can't – yes, I understand if you freeze frame, his foot comes off the base and all of that. But to me, at that point, the spirit of the rule, what it was in the game, how it would have been, that ball was not going to be a double play, okay? So a force out would be exactly what would have happened regardless. And I think that that's what it should have been left at. I could not believe, A, that it was challenged, and then that, B, I didn't care that I kept seeing the replay with that foot off the base, whatever it was, or next to the base. I still don't understand how. I know it's not really the quote-unquote neighborhood play anymore. You just say no. It's, he's out. That's it. He would have touched the base if he wouldn't have been slid into. I don't care what kind of logic you use. But then what really to me was the head scratcher is how do you turn it from, okay, we're going with the letter of the law, we're going to say his foot was off the base, so we're going to call it, safe somehow. The guy doesn't touch second base and he's safe. We were talking about, Fred Merkel from whenever that was, 1908. they had to replay the pennant because the guy didn't touch second base. In this case, the guy didn't touch second base. He gets to go on the base and score a run. How the hell does that happen? Okay. But how do you then take that and say, okay, that's the ruling on the field. When we look at it, we're going to decide to suspend the guy for two games. If it was so bad that he was suspended for two games, then how is it not so bad that he's safe by not touching the base? You're not even going to call that it was interference. That's, to me, where it's a little bit nuts. But if it was totally up to me, call on the field, I would have lived with a force out, to be honest with you, even though it's a bit of a dirty play.
Well, I look at that as a conspiracy theory, actually, if you think about it. I mean, because isn't it very convenient, and I don't believe in conspiracy theories, but it really rang true. Isn't it convenient that they passed down this two-game suspension when he was about to play in New York, a place where it was going to be extremely hostile? If he got on the field, he would have to possibly, you know, be shielded, you know, because of people threatening to throw batteries or whiskey bottles or whatever, you want to go back to 73. And isn't it convenient that he made his appearance in the last game of the season, last game last night?
I'm completely with you, Ed. I think that that was to avoid what they considered to potentially be an ugly scene, that they didn't want this marquee, you know, two huge media market series to get attention because somebody threw a bottle and hit somebody in the head or something like that. And I think that's why. And I know Don Mattingly gave a million, you know, pretty poor excuses, frankly, of why he did not use him in those games. There was one situation where he pinch hit a righty against a righty instead of bringing up Utley. I think that was in game three. And he gave some kind of lame excuse. I'll go conspiracy theory and say, even though they were, you know, Players Association probably really forced Utley to appeal the suspension. But I think that there was a backroom discussion with Mattingly to say, you know what, fine. He won't be suspended. We won't do whatever happened. Maybe you don't get paid when you're suspended, fine. But don't use this guy in New York because we don't want ugliness. I think that's what happened.
No doubt. I was there on Monday, you know, at the game. I was up in Pepsi Porch with my wife. And I'm even surprised Utley came out for the pregame, announcing of the rosters. You know, I mean, you have to admit, it was hysterical. I don't know if they showed it on TV, but as soon as they got to Utley, because you're going down, everybody's being booed from the Dodgers trainers to, you know, whatever scrubs that they had on the bench. They get to Utley. They keep the picture and they go, you know, second baseman, Chase Utley. Booze, yo, Utley suck chance, everything. They panned on Utley for probably the most uncomfortable 20 to 25 seconds before they moved on. And because everybody else got 5 seconds before they moved on, it was actually quite funny. But, I mean, then we, you know, the Mets, City Field operators stoked the fire even more. But, I mean, for the fact he even showed his face, I was really surprised.
Hey, and just two quick things. Yeah. One is I was in the Pepsi porch at that time as well, and the fact that you didn't come by and say hello, I don't know if I blame you. I was screaming pretty loud. But more importantly, I agree with you 100%. And you know, a lot of Met fans, you know, there's a knee jerk reaction to say that the Mets as an organization do everything wrong. I think that the pregame introductions was the example of where the Mets did everything right. They left Utley on the screen much longer. I agree with you. And I think it was to let the fans vent and to build the energy in the stadium. And then this, you know, almost wrestling trick of not bringing Tejada out with the rest of the team and having him limp out with a cane last after all the introductions was theatrics, and it was just the Mets seizing the moment and saying, how do we somehow turn the introductions and this scene, this bad play who's got everybody upset and could be turning the series against us, how do we turn it into something that just galvanizes the team, the fans, everything? They did it right. Let's give them some credit. Instead of saying, wow, the Mets screw everything up, they hit every note to make sure that that got the right emotional response, probably from the team, but also from the fans.
I agree with that. Also, and to bring it back around, I would say that the thing about the play that aggravates me no end, and you know, I have no problem if Utley gets his next year, is the focus became so much about Utley. And what aggravates me about that is someone who, from day one, from when they were first whispering about it years ago, said, you want to screw things up, you put replay in.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big issue was that, just like I knew it would, not only did replay not, quote, fix a problem in a big game, a postseason game, it created a problem. Because just like in football, now all logic and common sense has been thrown to the ground so we can study minutiae of whether Ruben Tejada's toe was a millimeter or second base while someone was barreling in at him. So if I understand this correctly, they're upset that Tejada didn't stay there and get hit worse by the freight train that was coming at him. And so he was penalized, and his team was penalized as they carted him off the field by awarding Chase Utley second base. And I feel that I can't even look at Utley as the major villain here. The major villain was sanity, and the end of sanity is also called replay, because this game is a game of intricate plays. It's not a game of – this isn't tennis where it's the ball's in, the ball's out, wonderful. You want to use replay for home runs, that was fine. They're clearly expanding it way beyond what it should be expanded for. Every play at second base should be off limits. It's just insanity, and I knew it was going to happen. And Joe Torre, who as far as I'm concerned has a long history – beginning in the late 70s as manager of the Mets, being embarrassed for the game. Embarrassed himself. The same guy that didn't think it was a problem when Roger Clemens was throwing a bat at Mike Piazza, what a surprise, was saying, oh, I'm not sure. And how you could ever not call interference, then suspend him, is something I'm still waiting for an explanation to, because as someone who didn't think it was interference, I didn't. I thought the call was correct on the field. Guy's out. I don't understand and never will understand how you could not call interference and then suspend them. If you're going to suspend them, we should have went back and replayed the game. You can't have it both ways. But that's Major League Baseball.
I got to agree 100%, Mike. Replay has ruined baseball. This is not what replay was for. We saw it with this play. I've seen it a couple of times now during the season where a runner would slide into second base and he's safe, but because as he comes up, like his leg lifts like a little bit off the base and he gets tagged again, and they still say safe, and then it's reviewed and they call him out. If this is what they put replay in for, they're going to kill baseball, because you can't. It's unwatchable. This was, replay was put into for home runs, for balls down the line. It wasn't like for this minutia, and it's too much. That play should, if you're not going to call interference, then just call it a forced play. He's out, and move on. For them to go do this and then zoom in on it and see that his toe is just a millimeter off the back, and to call that safe, that's ridiculous. Then you might as well do it for every play. And you're going to see a bench clear with these guys sliding into a base, and the fielder pushing the guy a little bit to get him off and then tags him, and then they're going to call him out. There's going to be bench clearers over that, because that's not the intent of what replay is for. I can't believe that baseball screwed up replay more than the NFL. The NFL replay is ridiculous. Major League Baseball is 1,000 times worse.
But you know what?
Anything you can do, they said, anything you can do, we can do better.
Yeah.
So move on to something a little happier now, right? Hey, we won the series, right?
Yeah,
definitely.
Again, I'll go to you first, Steve. Vinny and I discussed him already, but for you, I'm going to lead the witness a little bit here. Which Jake DeGrom impressed you more, game one or game five?
Oh, game five. Game five, because I'm sitting there in the first inning, and it was funny because in Terry Collins' pregame presser, he kept talking about, you know, how they want to get DeGrom to get, you know, try to get to the eighth inning and go right to Familia. And then he was asked, he goes, well, what about if he has trouble and stuff? You know, who would be the next guy in? And Collins goes, well, I'm not even worried about that. He goes, unless, of course, he goes, you know, Jake gets blown up in the second inning, which I doubt will happen. And that's all I kept thinking about when I'm watching the first inning. I'm like, oh, my God. I said, he jinxed it. I said, look, I said, they're teeing off on him. I'm like, and all I'm thinking is he's going to bring in Nice. You know, I'm like, this can't happen. And to DeGrom's credit, he just couldn't command that fastball the first couple innings. His breaking ball was pretty good, but he just couldn't keep going with that. They'd lay off it. And then he finally got command. But, you talk about an effort. I mean, you know, every inning there were guys on base. It was just, you know, it was like they were starting out with first and second or man on second just about every inning. I think you only had one clean inning, yes. one three inning. And then you see the pitch count was going up, and I'm like, oh, man. I'm like, what? I mean, who's going to come in next? I mean, how much can they put Syndergaard in? And then I saw Eric Goodell get warmed up, and I was like, oh, my God, he does that. I'm going to jump out the window. You can't bring that guy in. And I'm like, then I saw Colon get up. I said, all right, I feel a little better with Bartolo. But then, you know, DeGrom just got it. It started to kick in. And it was funny, the more the game went on, the better he got. He just got better. And then when Syndergaard came in, I mean, that was it. The Dodgers were like, you got to be kidding me. You know, he goes, well, how many more of these guys do you have in the back? You know, he came in and just blew them away. And then I got nervous because they took Syndergaard out in the eighth inning. But, after the game, I mean, what Familia did, he did a Mariano Rivera last night. That was like one of the great relief appearances in years. But, you know, when after they – and the thing they did too is, I mean, Syndergaard must have got up like three times to warm up. So Colin said, he goes, you know, even though he only threw like 10 pitches in the inning, he threw about 100 because he was in the bullpen getting up three times. So that's going to put a strain on that. I guess that's why he may not – start game two. They have to see, but I mean, you know, it's, you know, usually when you watch a guy like something, you know, the guy who we're going to see in this series, Jake Arrieta, and this guy just, you know, when he's on that, on his game, it's just like, you know, he's got everything going, and just sit back and watch. But when a pitcher like DeGrom, I mean, we're not talking about a grizzled veteran here. This is a young guy, and he figured it out. He gutted it out. You could tell, like, he has this, you know, demeanor. Bartolo Colon is the same way. I guess maybe he feeds off him. He never seems like upset or anything. He was even in the on-deck circle, and he was smiling. I don't know, somebody said something to him, and he was laughing. I said, this guy is like, he's not worried. You know, he's like, he's not panicking. You know, he's in control here. He knows that his fastball is just not doing it. Let me go with this breaking ball for a while. Let me see if I can get that fastball back. And he finally did towards the end of his innings, about the fifth, sixth inning. He was really locked in. So you got it. I mean, that's one of the great performances, DeGrom, we've seen by a Met pitcher in a postseason.
No, it was great. And Ed, to lead the same witness, I mean, remember, game one was pretty fabulous, too. So do you have a pick, or is it a dead heat for you? What's your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's pretty close, but I have to say game five, because he had to overcome so much adversity. I mean, at least in game one, they had the lead through the entire game. I mean, I don't think he even gave up that lone run in game one. Yesterday, it was pretty much every, just like Steve said, almost every inning, somebody was on base. There was even a point where there was runners on first and third with only one out, and he was going, oh, no, this is when the Dodgers are going to, you know, bust it open. He knuckled down. This is the mark of a good pitcher, you know, a guy that is an elite pitcher. Even when he doesn't have his A stuff, he's able to grind it through, and he was able to last into the sixth inning. I was on eggshells the entire night last night. You could ask my wife, you could ask anybody on Twitter. I mean, I was just nauseous. I was queasy. but I was, you know, trying to be as positive as I can. But, you know, I was saying to myself, I thought our best shot was the night before against Kershaw, because Greinke, almost nobody touches Greinke. And the one thing that nobody, I mean, maybe one person actually reported today was this was the first time all season that Greinke actually lost, you know, a game where he was winning. You know, that they actually blew a lead on him in that respect. I mean, it was just amazing to see. And I'll tell you, when I saw Syndergaard get in there, I was like, oh, no. You know, I thought the kid was going to I have confidence in the kid, but I'm saying I've never seen him in a relief role. I don't know. You know, sometimes he has a penchant of giving up a solo home run, or he has a meltdown inning. Please don't let me this. And then with the six-out save, it seemed like they were throwing everybody at Familia. When you had Rollins come out, even though Rollins is past his prime, he still has a little bit left in his tank. I didn't settle down until Utley lined out to Granderson in the ninth. I said, okay, we got this in the bag now. It was just a daunting night. I was joking. I said, either way, I'm going to have a coronary, so I'm going to drop dead whether we win or we lose last night. It was just one of those games. That game, in my opinion, you know, ranks right up there with the 16-inning game, which pretty much ironically was 29 years to the day, that 16-inning game against Houston. I mean, it was that type of epicness, in my opinion. It might not have had the back-and-forth, you know, scoring opportunities, but you were on the edge of your seat, you were white-knuckling, you were, you know, if you were religious, you were saying your prayers. If you weren't religious, you were just, you know, just hoping against hope that nothing, you know, that we weren't going to blow this thing, and thank goodness we held on, and thank goodness for Daniel Murphy, you know, the guy that makes the most bonehead plays on the, you know, base path, came through with a play that was actually quite smart, and the fact that he tattooed that home run to give us the lead, I mean, it was just amazing.
Well, it was tough not to be religious in the seventh inning when Thor came from the god of, you know, the god with the hammer that throws lightning bolts. So, like, it was really hard not to be religious that inning. And so, Vinny, real quick, because both Ed and Steve touched on it, what did you think about Thor coming out of the pen and Familia going two innings?
Well, look, I'll be completely honest. I think Ed said something similar. I was concerned. It's funny. I'll admit it because it was wrong. I know it sounds silly, but at that point when it got to be the sixth inning, seventh inning, I thought this whole bringing Syndergaard in relief experiment should be off the table. I thought we should have, you know, perhaps brought in a guy like Colon or an actual relief pitcher. I know that Reed and Clippert have not been that good, but I was nervous about Syndergaard. Robles, that's right. You know, I was nervous that he had never relieved. He, as you said, I think Ed, you said it. He says prone sometimes to some rough, innings. There was even a situation he was warming up. He was going to come in with guys on base, not even start an inning. I was really nervous. I got over that nervousness real quick when he came in. He threw his first pitch 100 miles an hour for a strike.
Yep.
I felt pretty stupid at that point, but I was nervous about it. Now, however, I didn't transform so quickly. I saw a lot of people on Twitter last night saying, oh, my God, how could you be taking Syndergaard out after that one inning? I was completely fine going to Familia for two innings. I know that Syndergaard looked great in his one inning, beyond great, unhittable. But at some point, I wanted an actual reliever in there. And hell, Familia's been our best reliever all year, except for, you know, maybe a weak period in the middle of the season. You know, why would you not want to get the ball into his hands as quickly as you can? So I was very happy that they made that switch. But I was wrong. I was pleasantly surprised about Syndergaard. I thought, you know, I was skeptical, but man, that was fun to watch.
Well, I can say I really have to bone up on my Norse mythology, because I'm really starting to buy into this whole Thor thing, because when he struck out the god of baseball, Justin Turner, who no one else can get out apparently in all of baseball, the new combination of Ruth Bonds, Garrick, I don't know who else, I said, this guy really is something else. And I'm sorry. And so I have to ask the panel, I'm going to start with you, Ed. What is going on with Justin Turner?
The kid was always a grinder with the Mets, you know, but he was always more, I mean, and he would play almost every position. For a guy that was a bench player. He played a lot in those really bad years, but that's the fact of the matter was he had not matured. He went to, you know, I mean, and I mean, I didn't want to see him go when he was non-tendered. I was scratching my head, but, you know, and we all know it was about money, even though the excuse was that he was not a positive influence on the clubhouse or he wasn't taking his role seriously. Yeah, I guess, you know, being the pie guy, you know, he got that pretty much labeled that, but he was picked up by Los Angeles. He broke down his swing. He built it back up. And I mean, I'm never going to say he's an elite player, but he's made himself into probably a good mid-level, you know, star. I mean, where he's going to have a decent payday whenever he hits free agency. I mean, he was a diamond, you know, and he turned out to be a real steal. I mean, I wish the Mets could have kept him because, you know, it would have helped us during those summer months where David Wright wasn't there. We were starting John Mayberry or Eric Campbell or whoever, you know, in his place in for offense. So, I mean, kudos to him. But, you know, I was getting sick and tired of him, you know, double after double after double. That's for damn sure.
Oh, that's an understatement. Steve, I would imagine you agree.
I never liked Justin Turner. I never liked him.
You're not going to like him now.
No, I can't stand him now, but when he was with the Mets, I thought that he was a real jerk when he was here. And it seems that that was how most in the organization felt about him. The Justin Turner with the Dodgers is not the Justin Turner that was with the Mets. The Justin Turner with the Mets was just happy to be in the major leagues, collecting a major league paycheck and acting like the court jester. He was just happy to be a hanger-oner, and that's why Sandy Alderson didn't like him and wanted to get rid of him. Because, you know, and I give credit to Alderson because he got rid of guys like him who just didn't fit here, and you know, he wanted to get a winning attitude. What it did for Turner, it woke him up to show him, listen, you know, that stupid act with the pies and being the court jester, that doesn't keep you in the big leagues. You got to perform. And he, you know, and to his credit, he has performed very well. I mean, this guy was batting cleanup for the Dodgers. That's like insane. But, you know, I don't miss him. I mean, if he was on the Mets, where would he play? Where was he going to play? He's not taking Wright's spot. He's not taking Murphy's spot.
Wherever he wants, he's Babe Ruth.
Well, what he needs is a good bath and a shave. That's kind of haircut.
He's from the Jason Wirth styling program.
Oh, like yeah. I mean, all that's missing is the shopping cart and the bottles in the bag.
I think the most ironic thing is he, you know, saw tutelage from Marlon Byrd, you know, and who helped him with his swing. You know, another person that Sandy Alderson obviously didn't like because Byrd, as we all know, went against their philosophy of hitting. You know, he was telling these players, you know, do what you think is comfortable and, you know, that, you know, get on base, which is instead of working, you know, instead of actually working counts, he was telling these players, the younger players, to be more aggressive. And that's what pretty much punched Byrd's ticket out of New York. Thank goodness we got Herrera and Vic Black for him. I mean, it's just, I found that ironic that an ex-Met helped, you know, it helped a guy that turned into a Mets killer.
Yeah, the Turner stuff was killing me. I guess we got to move on. I'd love to keep talking about the Dodgers, but I can't believe it. We got another series and it's plus right away tomorrow. So it's Cub time. So let me start with the following question to Steve. Which is, I mean, these Cubs, it's going to be a different type of series. They're not the same type of team as the Dodgers, and they can hit. They got a lot of scary guys. Is there anybody that scares you the most?
I tell you, I watched the Kyle Schwarber hit that home run. They said they're going to leave it on top of that scoreboard because that thing went flying. And I mean, all of them. I mean, I don't know who. I mean, Chris Bryant. Schwarber, they have him in left field. Anthony Rizzo. I mean, we have dominating young pitching. They have dominating young hitting. This is one of the great matchups. Plus, it's Cubs-Mets. You know, if you're of a certain age, you hate the Cubs because between 69 and then in the early mid-80s, the Cubs were, you know, were our rival. And then after, you know, after like 87, 88, that was it. The Cubs stunk, and then we were back and forth. But to have this matchup, it's just going to – I mean, every guy in that lineup can hit a home run. It's like there's no – I don't know who you pitch around in this lineup. That's what's going to be the tough part for the Mets. But I think of it too, playing in Wrigley Field, maybe this wakes up Cespedes. Maybe it wakes up Wright. I mean, maybe they launch home runs. Maybe Duda finally does something too in this postseason. If the Mets don't hit, I don't care how much pitching we have. We're not shutting these guys out, all right? We're not holding them to two runs. If you hold them maybe two runs an inning, you'd be lucky. It's going to be rough. I mean, this is going to be very tough.
So I would say to recap, Steve's scared of everybody.
Yeah, I am.
Anybody in particular that scares you?
Rizzo. Rizzo's always been known to be a Met killer. It doesn't matter what type of, you know, how many people are on base, whether it's by himself. He seems to be always able to get that clutch hit that puts, you know, has put the Cubs ahead of the Mets in the past. I mean, but I look at it this way. I mean, I disagree with Steve in one respect. You know, it's like the old adage goes, great pitching stops great hitting. So I, you know, feel that if we're on, you know, I mean, maybe they'll get one run per inning. Who knows? But I do think, especially with the confines of Wrigley Field, the ball, you know, if it's flying, if the wind's going out, you know, Cespedes. I mean, because there was a couple hits that Cespedes had and that almost went out, I mean, when he wasn't striking out. I mean, that's the other thing. He has to pretty much, you know, keep his head in the game because it seemed like he was reaching for too many outside strikes. I know that, you know, he likes trying, you know, reaching for, you know, balls outside and, you know, or at least breaking pitches, and he was getting fooled really bad. But there were a couple that he hit on the button that just were either just caught or, you know, really right to the warning track. I think if he gets that jet stream from Wrigley, we're going to see a couple of multiple home run games from him again.
Vinny, anybody scare you?
Look, I'm a little bit on the side of Steve that I'm afraid of everybody, but I think Schwarber is the one who at this point is pretty unconscious. So you got to be afraid of him. But I do think it's more the totality of it all. You know, they have, you know, a really – we went through the Dodgers. There were some weak spots in the lineup, okay? There aren't weak spots in the Cubs lineup. So it's really the kind of thing where we, you know, I know they say good pitching stops good hitting, but the Cubs are going to score some runs. We're going to have to, the Mets are going to have to score runs in order to win. I think it's more, I don't know if it's fear as much as it's the reality that this is going to be a bit of a different series and that the Mets are not going to be able to afford to have these stretches like they had against the Dodgers, albeit it was against guys like Kershaw and Greinke 4 out of 5 games. But you can't have David Wright going one for the series. You can't have Lucas Duda striking out 11 times. You can't have Cespedes have one game where he hits and the other games he goes to sleep. I mean, you're not going to be able to beat this team if that's the way that the offense is going to perform. That's the only thing.
That's all fair. I would say my feeling on it is it's a different lineup. You know, I had a hard time picking out the guy because there's a lot of guys. But when I said, okay, who's the guy that I really am worried about? You know, I'll call him the Justin Turner of the Chicago Cubs. I'm with Ed. It's Rizzo. I mean, he's got the back of the baseball card. Plus, just my personal experience of watching him killing the Mets. So I'm worried about a lot of people, like Steve. In particular, going to be anxious when Rizzo's up, especially if he's up in a rough spot. Before we run out of time, I want to do some predictions. First of all, let's recap our I'm going to recap the predictions from the NLDS, since we have our same blue ribbon panel together. We asked for a prediction of who we thought the key offensive player on the Mets would be, and Ed went with Duda, Steve and Vinny went with, I hate to bring it up, guys, Michael Kadaya.
Yeah.
And I went with David Wright, and both Ed and I would look really foolish, except at least we didn't pick Kadaya.
Yeah.
So,
hey, but David Wright back in that winning run in the first game, though.
Because at least my guy had a hit, a couple of walks, and the hit was a big hit. Duda had a big walk yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, the other predictions, though, okay, no surprise, this is the Blue and Orange Nation podcast, is Mets in 4, Mets in 4, Mets in 4, Mets in 5. So I would say congratulations to all. We had the most important prediction correct as a group. So, okay, I'll start with you, Steve. Today what I'm asking is who wins the series, how many games, and give me the LCS MVP.
Well, we're going to the World Series. We're winning it in seven. We have the home field advantage. That's big in this series because between Wrigley Field and City, there's a big difference. I think we'll win in seven. It's, you know, we're all gonna have, you know, we'll be taking nitroglycerin pills, but we're gonna probably we'll take it in seven. And the MVP, I think, is gonna. I think the guy who's gonna rebound is Cespedes. I think it's gonna be Cespedes.
Great answer, Ed.
I'm saying Cubs in five. No, I'm kidding. Actually, I think it's gonna be, no, I think it's gonna be the Mets in six. Yeah, I just feel that the home field advantage is just going to be, you know, it's the best thing that's going to happen to the Mets right now. Because just like Steve said, you know, being away, you know, if being in Citi Field, which is more of a neutral park, yeah, I mean, in terms of home runs allowed, I mean, favors, I think pitchers, you know, have a slight edge there now since they brought the walls in. But I think, honestly, I'm going to think the MVP is going to be Syndergaard. I really think that he's going to pitch at least, in there, and he's going to pitch a gem. It's, you know, and it's going to be a lights out. That's all I know.
Excellent. Vinny.
I'm going with Mets in seven. I do think it's going to be, as Steve said, you know, stressful series, up and down, tight games. But I do think the Mets are going to sneak it out. I think that the Mets pitching over a seven-game series being superior, I know Jake Arrieta is great. But even the drop-off, I know John Lester is a good pitcher, but John Lester is not as good as the Mets second starter. And then it gets worse from there from the Cubs in terms of the matchup. So I think that the pitching depth will be what shines through. But I'm going to go with a little bit of a different guy for the offensive player and perhaps the MVP of the series. I'm going with Curtis Granderson. I think that Granderson is going to light it up in the games at Wrigley Field. I think he's going to hit two home runs in those three games. I think he's going to be, you know, our best offensive player in this series. And, you know, as we said before, we're going to need runs, and I think he's going to be the key to it.
I think that's a great call on Granderson. That's a very interesting call. I'm going to go with. I also want to point out. I'm the guy that has Mets in five. So if everybody wants to know what's going to happen in this series, just remember that. But, I mean, you know how to bring it up. But anyhow, of course, I'm going to pick the Mets. You know, we know that. I'm picking them in six games. So if you got tickets for the seventh game, sorry, but you will get refunds. And for the LCS MVP, I'm with Steve. I think the more you watch Cespedes, what I feel is he's the type of guy that what he does is he punishes bad pitches. The Cubs don't have the depth. You know, you're not going to get Greinke, Kershaw. There's going to be a Hamill Day. Lester is not those guys. He's going to see enough pitching that he can punish. He's going to punish it, and I think he's going to be the LCS MVP. And so with that, I really want to thank you guys for coming on again. You know, we love being able to have the continuity with the panel for these postseason podcasts, so we really thank you, Cecilia. You're all fantastic again. And, Vinny, I'm going to throw it back to you.
No, and thank you again very much, guys. And we really, really hope that we'll be able to review these predictions and have the same kind of laughs when we're doing our World Series preview show in a week or so. So keep your calendars open because we're staying optimistic here.
Yeah, hope so. Let's hope so. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, guys.
Today.
It's amazing to be on here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Talk to you guys soon.
Okay. Definitely. Have a good night, guys.
Night.
So, Mike, I do have to say before we get to Artie, Artie's going to be on with us in a second. We got to you said it. We got to give credit where credit is due. You did predict the Mets in five, so you are the man. Now we got Artie from Brooklyn joining us. Now Artie was a little bit pessimistic, I would say, on our last call. Artie, how are you feeling nowadays? Are you a little? When did you feel good? Was it an hour after the last out? Like when did you start to really enjoy it?
I think I felt really good when there were two outs, and Familia pitched the ball into the dirt about 50 feet, and the guy swung at it. I was like, we're going to win this game. Before that, I never felt comfortable. And
like when,
this,
you mean
for,
when Familia started jumping up and down on the mound, and they all went
right,
off?
Right, right. And for a split second, just like I felt when Murphy hit that shot and it died in right field, when Utley hit that ball, I had the biggest knot in my stomach because I thought it was a homer. Just for that split second. And then when it just died out in right field, I said, thank God. Just thank
I
God.
Have to be
but
honest
I mean,
with Artie, when that ball left the bat, I thought it might have been gone too. And I thought that was just the most unfair thing that could ever happen in history.
Yeah,
in
very, very Piazza. I don't know if you remember, but
yeah.
Piazza, I thought, hit a shot yeah. that was gone also that got caught. And just thinking about what Terry, the moves that Terry made, and like with the quote before the game that he said, it's all gravy. I'm sitting there, I'm going, they're going to fire him. They're going to lose this game, and they're going to fire him. And he went out, and he just did. And he goes, if I'm going, I'm going with my best guys. I don't care who agrees. And Syndergaard were warmed up 3 or 4 times. All right, and to bring them in and have them blow away those people and have them not come in the eighth inning and go with Familia after he lost to the Dodgers. He blew a save the last time he faced the Dodgers in a four-out save. Do you guys realize that? That he blew
no,
a
I
save
didn't
with
realize
a four
that.
Yeah, his last four-out save he blew against the Dodgers and had the gall to bring him in the eighth inning. That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So, I mean, the only scary thing now, guys, is that I think the Mets are going to beat the Cubs. I know.
I was hoping you would say Cubs in four.
Yeah, I know. But I just, you know what it is? It's the home advantage. I'm going to put a little asterisk on it. If Terry decides that they're going to pitch Mats, why would they pitch Mats in game two? Can somebody explain that to me?
Because Syndergaard threw 100 pitches in the bullpen yesterday.
No, come on, Mike. He threw 100 pitches and blew away the guys. I wanted him to pitch all 3 innings.
Look at it another way. Syndergaard might be very valuable in a game 6 and game 7 in the bullpen.
See, now they've brought that up too. So you're telling me instead of pitching him twice, they're worried about him coming in from the bullpen like he did the last time for game 6 and 7?
I'm not
saying that
that's
their pitcher pitching twice.
I'm not saying that's their preference, but if they don't think he can give a quality start, that he's not ready to give a quality start in game 2, you got to use the guys as best you can.
Yeah, I just don't agree. I can't see that what Syndergaard pitched with the bullpen, and it's not like he's pitching stretch. He's just warming up. I can't see pitching again. Harvey should have pitched game 2, and they're doing it again with Matt pitching game 2. He's going to pitch 2 games. Why would they do that? I don't know. I don't get it. Vin, you agree with that?
Look, I think that the issue is that right now, look, I know that it doesn't appear that way, the way they're using these pitchers, but there still is this whole, we need to baby these guys a bit, even though it's the context of, you know, going for it in the postseason. And if they think it's overusing him to bring Syndergaard into game 2, I think that they're going to end up using Mats for game 2 because they're going to want to try, you know, it's quote unquote safer move. They have faith in all the arms. I think that's what it comes down to. And it's safer if they use Mats on full rest. I think, you know, I still think they're going with that. We could disagree with the philosophy and say, let's go for it, our best guys. They don't operate that way. Mike, do you think I'm missing something?
They're being consistent.
Yeah. I just think that they fell in love with what Syndergaard did in the bullpen and that what the Dodgers did to Reed and Clippard scared them. And I think what's Mike is right. I think they're looking at game 6 and 7 to do exactly what Syndergaard did before. And I think that's just – and Vin, you are telling me you don't want no part of Syndergaard in the bullpen. And I think When that bull, I mean, I shouldn't. They shouldn't be thinking of Syndergaard to be pitching in the bullpen rather than starting him. I just think that's the wrong thing.
Right.
I mean, I wanted Mats to be in there because they don't have a lefty specialist, and they didn't do any of that. They put Nice
right.
in there and never used him when they should have, actually. But I still
point.
Pick the Mets. Only if Mats pitches two games, 2-5 or 2-6, I'm out. I'm picking the Cubs. All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Art. Well, Mike, I think, you know, Artie's optimism, you know, that doesn't scare me, Mike. I'm still optimistic myself. I don't even mind if Mats is games 2-6. I think against – I know we talked about the Cubs' offense. Mats is not our best pitcher. But you know what? The Cubs' pitching is not that great. Mats is as good as their third best pitcher, maybe their second best pitcher at this point.
I want Mats to go in games 2-6 because I just heard early Artie say that if he does, pick him the Cubs. And so that's
okay, good. Now you'll feel much better.
Yeah.
All right, well, look, well, that about wraps it up. This was a great show, Mike. We have to thank our guests. We have to thank Ed Marcus and Steve Keen for joining us. You know, the panel worked before and hope it works again. Thank Artie from Brooklyn. Mike, are you ready for this? Or this has been a wild ride, and this is probably just the beginning. This series is going to be big. What are you thinking?
I'm getting the coffee ready, and I'm going to just keep plugging along.
That's all we could do. Listen, thanks you again. We're going to try to see if we can sneak in a show during the series. We'll keep everybody posted. But otherwise, everybody, tonight, try to get some rest because I don't think you're going to have a calm moment from now until next Sunday night. I think that we will all be very tired but very happy when we get to the end of this series. Thanks again, everybody. Thanks for the guests and for Artie. Thanks to Mike. And let's go, Mets.